Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Tale of the Dragon by Connie DeMarco, narrated by Hannah Lass. Canyons of steel had plunged the street below into a false early darkness. Sunday afternoon, bleak and gray, downtown deserted and misty. The attorney worked alone in his office, a halogen lamp casting a bright pool of light on the papers spread across the desk. His brow furrowed in concentration as he studied the documents, considering which would be needed for the court hearing later in the week. A file box filled with reams of paper rested on the floor next to his chair. He grasped another handful of documents and flipped through the pages, mentally cursing his associate who should have already completed this task. He closed his eyes for a moment and took a deep breath in an effort to control his temper. His doctor had warned him about his blood pressure. Lazy damn incompetence, he thought. All of them. Did he really have to do this gut work himself? He heard the ping of the elevator doors in the corridor, but ignored the sound, certain it was the weekend cleaning staff. He wanted no interruptions and planned to finish his review within the hour. He glanced up in irritation as the door swung open. "What the hell do you want now?" he barked. Not waiting for an answer, he swiveled in his chair and leaned forward, flipping up the lid of the nearest file box. A blinding light filled his sight as sharp metal was thrust into his neck. His attacker stepped back. Arterial blood sprayed the wall. His hand reached for the wound. His mouth opened, but he could not speak. Twitching uncontrollably, he slumped forward onto the desk, the complexities of trial strategy no longer on his mind. 1. Revenge is a dish best served cold, or so it's been said in many cultures and in various ways. I'm not sure I agree. I've always imagined that impulse arising from a hot cauldron of bubbling, poisonous hatred. An anger nurtured and folded in upon itself for so long, its force is a volcanic eruption. Hot, plutonian, exploding from the depths of the psyche. If I want to be honest, I'd have to admit to falling prey to the desire for revenge upon mine enemies as well, however transitory those adversaries might be. Lord knows I have my share of Pluto-ruled Scorpio in my chart, but in the final analysis, I am a Sagittarian, able to eventually rise above all those deep and murky impulses, however painful that process might be. And like a good little girl, I give myself a whacking, self-righteous pat on the back for doing so. My name is Julia Bonatti, Julia Elizabeth Bonatti, and I'm an astrologer. I study natal charts. I contemplate character. I analyze things to death and always wonder what makes people tick, what drives a person to an act of revenge, and how to spot that in a natal chart. After all, revenge isn't a planet or a house or an aspect. It's not even an emotion like clear hatred. It's a reaction born of perceived injury and humiliation. Looking back now, little did I think my life could become forfeit to someone else's need for retaliation, for a transgression I never committed nor knew of, just because I was sticking my nose in the wrong place at the wrong time. As they say, no good deed. 2. It was that very same good deed that found me clambering off the 38 Geary bus, dressed in my grown-up lady clothes, at 8:30 on a chilly October morning. The coming week would find me at a law firm where I had once worked, almost 3 years ago, back in the days before I built my clientele and found a measure of independence. Independence does have a downside, though. It's called no steady income. Well, that's not quite fair. I have a decent income from my private clients and the astrological advice column I write for the Chronicle, but a serious car repair, a vet bill, and a dental bill had put a major crimp in my budget. So when David Myers, my old boss and now a client, called and begged me, yes, he begged, to cover for his vacationing secretary for a week, I agreed. Not without trepidation. I had no intention of returning to my old life of working 9 to 5, but I liked David, and he had been a good friend at a time when I needed one. He had hired me when the death of my fiancé had sucked my life into a black hole, and the job, as tedious as it was, had given me sanctuary and a little bit of security during a long healing process. So I figured I owed him. That was the other reason I agreed. I just hoped Muriel, his secretary, had no intention of extending her vacation. The bus pulled away in a blast of exhaust fumes, and the wind whipped dead leaves along the gutters of the street. I pulled up the collar of my coat and craned my neck, staring up at the shiny steel megalith at 44 Montgomery. I sighed. Just a week. I can do this, I mumbled to myself, and joined the throngs of office workers crossing the street. I stepped into the revolving door and entered the lobby. A central concierge desk was decorated with an autumn display of chrysanthemums, gourds, and dried flowers. A sign announced a pumpkin carving contest, all entries to be submitted by Thursday at 5 o'clock. I headed for the elevator bank, hit the button for the 41st floor, and squeezed to the rear. David's firm, Myers, Dade & Schultz, LLP, had grown a bit in the last few years and now occupied the entire 40th floor and half of the 41st. The other half of the 41st floor was now sealed off. It had once been occupied by a now defunct mortgage brokerage, and I was sure David planned to expand and occupy the entire floor. The elevator whizzed past the first 20 floors, the digital display showing XX's. I've always felt a degree of discomfort at that digital display. What would happen if the doors opened on such a floor? Would we enter another dimension where Rod Serling hovered in a darkened corner, or face a blank brick wall? I would definitely suffer an extreme claustrophobic meltdown. Best not to think about all that. My imagination sometimes gets the better of me. The elevator made several stops between the 21st and 40th floors. By the time it reached the 41st, I was the lone passenger. I stepped off, turned the corner, and walked the long, carpeted corridor to arrive at the double doors of David's private office. Passing the employee lounge, my nose twitched at the aroma of freshly brewed coffee. I pushed open one of the doors and entered David's outer reception area. As the senior litigation partner of the firm, he enjoyed a private suite, a room lined with oak paneling, built-in bookshelves, and plush carpeting, as well as a corner office. A small, tapestry-covered sofa and two chairs stood across from Muriel's secretarial desk. Several lamps on low tables around the room provided lighting. David's voice was droning into a dictaphone in the inner office. The overall effect was hushed and restful. Good for nervous clients, but a few days of this and they'd find me snoring over my keyboard. I hung my coat in a small closet concealed by the paneling and tapped on the inner door. David was seated behind an executive-sized mahogany desk piled high with files and loose papers. The surrounding floor was littered in the same fashion.
"Julia, hi. Come on in."
David's in his mid-50s, with a round face and ruddy complexion. Today, he wore a blue shirt, open at the neck, and a gray sweater vest. He had loosened his tie and shed his suit jacket, now thrown over one of the two leather wing chairs in front of his desk. Three half-filled cups of coffee from prior days sat on the desk blotter, two of them showing the first signs of new life forms. David held a jelly donut in one hand and an open file in the other. A dribble of jam spotted his chin. I pointed to his chin. He laughed.
Excuse me, terrible table manners. How are you, by the way?
Before I could respond, he continued,
I so appreciate your coming in this week. I'm always lost when Muriel's gone. I can never find a thing.
He waved the jelly donut in a semicircle, vaguely indicating the mounds of surrounding paper. I resisted the temptation to rush at his donut with a napkin. Anything I can do now? He smiled, his face lighting up.
No, I'm fine. I may have some letters in a little bit. Get yourself settled in. Would you like a donut?
He gestured toward a half-open box on a side table. Thanks, I'm fine. I stood. You know, it must be synchronicity because I was about to call you.
Really?
Yes. Remember we talked about setting up an appointment? I've been expecting you to call. David stared at me in silence for a moment.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right, I forgot.
I waited a moment to see if he'd have any further comments. Everything going okay at work? At the firm? He nodded.
Sure, everything's fine.
I wasn't so certain, given what I knew about David's chart. But if he wasn't interested in hearing what I had to say, what more could I do? David began to ruffle through a stack of papers, donut still in hand. He nodded distractedly, and I headed back to the outer office, shutting the door behind me. I sat in Muriel's chair and adjusted it higher, then flipped on the computer. I glanced around. The desk held an old-fashioned Rolodex, a phone with several buttons, a pottery urn full of pens and pencils, and a small clock. Two photos in silver frames sat in a place of honor on the desk. One was of a large, taffy-colored Persian cat. The other, a photo of a young couple posing with a boy in his early teens and a girl of maybe 9 or 10. I hadn't seen Muriel since I left the firm, but I remembered her as a quiet, attractive woman in her 50s, her dark hair sprinkled with gray. The family picture must be her nephew, his wife, and their two kids. I stashed my purse in the roomy bottom drawer of the desk, next to a pair of well-worn flats, a box of crackers, and two containers of dry soup. I dug the crackers and soup out and moved them to an upper drawer. High-pitched voices filtered down the corridor from the other offices in the litigation section, the only department on this floor. Ever nosy, I stepped out to the corridor and sauntered in that direction. A female voice, dripping with barely controlled annoyance, said, "I left that on your desk yesterday." A higher-pitched voice, tinged with authority, responded, "That can't be possible. I would have seen it."
"Would you like me to come in and find it for you?"
Four litigation attorneys, Jack Harding, Ira Wallstone, Roger Wilkinson, and Nora Layton, had their offices here. They shared two secretaries. One very small office was set aside for Suzanne, the lone paralegal. The demanding voice had to be Nora's. A painfully thin man leaned against the wall of the corridor outside the door to the attorney's offices. He was dressed in jeans, black leather chaps, and a red and black bulky jacket. He held a motorcycle helmet sporting red and yellow flames in the crook of his arm. His straw-colored hair was shaggy and hung in ragged strands around a long, sallow face. He didn't smile as I walked toward him.
"That might be a help if it was on my desk," Nora's voice replied.
I turned the corner. A young woman with cropped hair dyed green sat at the first desk. Her head was down.
"Bitch," she mumbled under her breath.
She jumped when she realized I was standing in front of her.
"Oh."
She recovered quickly.
"Can I help you?"
A plastic skull draped with tiny, flashing orange bulbs took up a corner of her desk. I wondered if her hair color was permanent or just an early Halloween statement. Another woman, older and heavyset, with straight black hair to her collar, occupied the second desk. She glanced up briefly and returned to her work. I wanted to laugh, but not within earshot of Nora's office. Instead, I smiled conspiratorially and held out my hand. "Hi, I'm Julia. I'm filling in for Muriel for a week while she's on vacation.
I thought I'd come down and introduce myself. I used to work here a few years ago.
The green-haired woman visibly relaxed and smiled. She stood and accepted my handshake.
Nice to meet you. I'm Danny, Danny Nichols.
Her hands were tattooed with flowers and sported a lot of silver. Her clothing was dark, her makeup even darker, and an iridescent titanium ring flashed on one nostril. Several more studs pierced on each ear climbed to the top of her lobes. She was a few inches shorter than I. Her baggy shirt was cinched with a wide belt, and her black pants were tucked into heavy boots. Danny's eyes drifted to the doorway where the biker in leathers was waiting.
Oh, Billy, I'm sorry. I forgot you were still here. They decided to file that with the court tomorrow. Can you come back then, same time?
Sure.
Billy nodded sullenly and turned toward the elevators, his leathers creaking as he walked. Danny turned back to me.
That's Billy, one of the guys from our attorney service. He does our court runs most days. I should have introduced you. You might need to send something to court.
I hope not. It's been a while and I'm pretty rusty. Danny nodded.
I hear you. Necessary evil if you want a paycheck.
Besides the two secretarial desks, the area was crammed with several filing cabinets and stacked boxes. The door farthest from the entrance was shut, as though its occupant hadn't yet arrived. It was the large corner office, and I was sure it would be Jack Harding's, the next most senior member, after David, of the group. I glanced into Nora's office. She was seated at the desk with a phone to her ear. She had swiveled in her chair and was looking out the window at a view of other high-rises. She swung back quickly and slammed the phone into its cradle.
Danny, you still have my file with the handwritten note? I asked you to keep it in here.
Danny took a deep breath and looked at me as if to say, "Give me patience." Nora rose from her chair and moved to the doorway. She hesitated when she saw me at Danny's desk.
Oh, I didn't.
During the time I had worked at David's firm, I had never dealt directly with Nora. She had joined us just as I was leaving. Her look swept over my outfit, probably tallying the cost of my clothing to the last penny. She smiled suddenly, a smile that did nothing to warm her eyes. Unsure who I was, whether another attorney or a client, she wanted to remain within bounds. After an uncomfortable beat, I extended my hand.
You're Nora, right?
I'm Julia. I'm filling in for Muriel for a week. Nora's eyes glazed over.
Oh, yes, nice to meet you.
She shook my hand limply. I was no longer an object of interest. I turned to Danny. If you're busy and need help, just call me. You know where I am.
Thanks, but I try to stay out of the way of the big guy.
David? I smiled. He's not that bad. In fact, he's a very nice guy. And I love the skull, I said, referring to her office decoration.
Danny, I really could use your help now.
Nora retreated to her office.
Yes, ma'am.
Danny grimaced at me and made an obscene gesture at Nora's back with her tongue. I beat a retreat rather than be caught laughing. On the way back, I made a stop at the staff lounge to grab a cup of coffee. An overhead cabinet held mugs decorated with the firm logo, but the little coffee maker took me a moment to figure out. I sighed. Computerized coffee. I lifted its hood and popped a small plastic pod in the slot. The machine began to spit out a dark brew. When it gave its last burp, I slid the cup out. My hand jerked involuntarily as a high-pitched keening sound reached my ears. The mug slipped from my hand, spewing coffee into the sink. Someone was screaming. 3. The cry had come from the litigation section. Coffee forgotten, I ran down the hall and sensed rather than heard David's footsteps behind me. Inside the central room, the door to Jack Harding's office stood open. Danny was standing next to her desk, staring at the open door. A man I recognized as Roger came to his doorway, a puzzled look on his face. I maneuvered around them and stepped through the door to Jack's office. A girl, not much more than high school age, her blonde hair in a ponytail, stood frozen in the center of the room. A sickly odor filled the air. Jack's body was slumped over the desk, a letter opener jutting from his neck. Scattered papers were pinned beneath him. Blood spatter marked the framed diplomas on the wall. Jack Harding was very dead. The only sound now was the quiet moaning of the young woman. The file she had been delivering had fallen to the floor. I fought against the feeling welling up from my insides and grasped her shoulders, turning her around to lead her out of the room. David stepped back from the doorway as I led her out. Nora and Roger and the two secretaries, now pressing in to view the grisly sight, made way for us.
"Yvonne," David spoke. "Are you all right?"
The copy clerk raised her eyes to him and opened her mouth, but couldn't speak. David's face was pale. He took one step inside the corner office, then backed out.
"I'll call the police."
He turned to face the others.
"We should all get out of here and wait in the lounge."
"What?" Roger spoke.
"I can't possibly. I'm sorry, I want everyone out."
"Is he dead?"
"Yes."
Yvonne's weight pressed against me. She was threatening to sink to the floor. Danny rushed forward, and together we half-walked, half-dragged the girl down the hall to the small couch in the lounge. We helped her into a sitting position and covered her head with a blanket from the emergency supply cabinet.
"She's in shock."
Danny placed a hand on Yvonne's forehead.
"We might need paramedics, too."
"Good idea." I hurried after David. He had picked up Muriel's phone and was describing our plight to the 911 operator. I whispered,
"Paramedics, too."
He nodded in response. He relayed the request and replaced the phone in its cradle. He turned to me.
"What the hell, Julia?"
We heard a shout from the corridor.
"What's going on? Where is everybody?"
David groaned.
"That's Ira. Let's get back."
Roger was explaining the discovery of Jack's body to the new arrival as we entered the lounge. Ira's gray hair straggled over his collar, and a smudge of blue ink marred the pocket of his shirt. He turned and stared at Yvonne.
"What's wrong with her?"
No one answered.
"We need to lock the litigation section."
David slipped a single key on a small metal ring out of his pocket. He handed it to me.
"Julia, go lock that main door. Then call down to the reception desk and tell them to advise everyone in the firm that this floor is off limits until further notice."
He turned to the others.
"Anyone expecting a client to arrive?"
He was greeted with silence.
"Okay, good. Then we'll all stay here while we wait for the police."
"I need my purse and things," Nora whined. "Danny, can you gather up my things? I can't possibly go in there now."
Danny stared at her boss. "You can't go back in your office, but it's okay for me?" Danny shook her head and sighed.
"What's the matter, Nora? Since when are you so sensitive?"
Ira snickered. Nora narrowed her eyes, skewering him with a look that could have shriveled a wild boar. David ignored the exchange.
"Your personal belongings are safe in there. You can get them later. I don't want anyone touching a thing until the police arrive."
I took the key from David's hand and walked the length of the corridor. My knees were wobbling and my hands were shaking so badly I could hardly fit the key into the lock. When Jack Harding was alive, I made sure to avoid him. Now, I had absolutely no intention of opening that other door and going near his body. I managed to get the door locked on the third try and returned to the lounge. Yvonne's complexion had taken on a gray sheen. I sat next to her and took her hand.
"You're safe. You won't be left alone, I promise."
Yvonne turned to face me and nodded silently. Danny perched on the edge of the couch next to the young girl and put an arm around her shoulder. Nora was pacing back and forth in front of one of the windows.
"Somebody give me a cigarette," she demanded. "I feel sick."
She sat down at the opposite end of the sofa from Yvonne, holding her head between her hands.
"No smoking here, Nora,"
Roger remarked in a judgmental tone. He pursed his lips.
Although you do have the distinction of being the last of the dinosaurs, someone who still smokes at the office.
Oh, give me a break. Who would care?
Danny.
What?
Do you have a smoke?
Yeah.
Danny reached into her pants pocket and passed a cigarette and lighter to Nora. She smiled at Roger.
I guess Nora's not the last.
David, this is ridiculous, Ira grumbled. You're treating us like criminals.
No, I'm not, David replied. All of you need to settle down. It's very important we stay together and don't touch anything in Jack's office or the central room. You can stay here or you're welcome to use my office, but we wait.
Roger had slumped into a plastic chair, his legs stretched in front of him. He was immaculately dressed in a gray suit, coordinated shirt, and a striped tie. His dark hair was touched with silver. He looked less upset than annoyed. Karen, the other secretary, sat at a table near the coffee machine, fidgeting with her hair. Her complexion was pasty, the color of uncooked dough. I caught Ira staring at me.
Who do we have here?
He asked with a suggestive smile.
This is Julia, David answered. You remember her, don't you?
Obviously not well enough,
he leered, exposing a mouthful of stained teeth. I ignored him.
Why don't you just shut it, Ira?
Nora huffed. She began to pace again, then stopped and turned to Danny.
Where's Suzanne? Why isn't she here?
She isn't in, Danny responded. Look, I don't know about anybody else, but I need coffee. I'll make a few cups. I'm sure we can all use some.
The young copy girl started to rock back and forth and cry, in spite of Danny's moral support. Ira glanced at the girl.
Can someone get her to be quiet?
Danny frowned.
Can someone grow you a heart? She just found Jack dead, for Christ's sakes.
Ira's head jerked back as if Danny had slapped his face. Nora observed the exchange between the two and smiled coldly. The elevator doors dinged, and we heard a commotion in the hallway. David left the lounge and walked toward the elevator bank. We heard him greeting the new arrivals. He reappeared in the doorway, followed by two men. The older detective was short and stout, with fair hair. The younger man wore a brown tweed jacket and dark-rimmed eyeglasses. He looked like he had been abducted from a high school chemistry class. The shorter man spoke.
Good morning. I'm Inspector Ralph Sullivan. This is Officer Nick Ray. We're with the Homicide Division of the San Francisco Police Department.
They held up their badges with the seven-pointed star of the SFPD.
We'll talk to each of you individually and take a more formal statement within the next few days. Please be sure you are available to us, if need be.
Sullivan turned to David.
I understand everyone here works on the 41st floor?
Yes,
David replied.
It's only the litigation section on this floor. The rest of our offices are on the 40th. I've asked the reception desk to keep anyone from coming up on the elevator. The man who...
David took a deep breath and tried to calm himself.
My partner, Jack Harding. He's been murdered.
David's complexion paled. He turned to me.
Julia, you have the key?
I passed it back to David. He turned away and led the detectives down the hallway to Jack's office, returning a few minutes later.
The officers will take each of you into my office to take your statements. I'm closing the firm early, and I want everyone to leave here as soon as we're done. You'll be allowed to collect your personal belongings under supervision, and if you'd like help getting home, I'd be happy to call a taxi service.
He looked around the room.
Could someone notify the answering service? Julia, if you don't mind, I could use your help for a short while until all this is done.
Karen looked up quickly.
I can stay and help too.
Thanks, I appreciate that, Karen, but I think we'll be fine, David replied.
Okay, then.
She smiled, patting her forehead with a napkin. I wondered if she were actually taking everything in. Inspector Sullivan reappeared in the doorway.
I'll speak with whoever
Sample complete. Ready to continue?